It is my belief that every woman has a story to share, a brokenness to heal, a silence to give voice to. I have 1,000 and you do too. This is a safe space where we can sit back, supportive of every woman, and be that place to embrace our brave and share. We see you. We hear you. We support you. I am your host, Misty Wagner, and this is the Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
The Rainy Day Collective Podcast. The Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
The Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
The Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
The Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
The Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
Rainy Day Collective.
The Rainy Day Collective Podcast.
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 Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rainy Day Collective Podcast. I am your host, Misty, and I am here with my very delightful friend, Amanda Hood. Amanda, welcome to the Collective Podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I mean, it only takes, what, like 3 years of talking to get this to happen?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, your busy LA schedule. You're like, let me fit you in. I can get you in 2028.
Well, my schedule is very, very different in these first few months of 2024, which has been really nice.
Yeah.
Slowed down.
Good.
Yes.
That's good. Well, and also I kept thinking, you know what? I'm just going to end up moving to California and then we'll just sit down and like drink coffee like normal people and do this. But alas.
I'm still very hopeful that that could happen.
I think about it periodically. Like California is terrifying housing price wise, but everything else wins. Well, I don't want your drive-by or your high speed chases, but everything else.
Do have a lot of high speed chases inexplicably. I don't know why. Cause we do also have the traffic problem. And you would think that one would
cross out the other,
but yeah. But yeah, housing prices are a thing, hence the reason I have a job, and also people still seem to be flocking to California because of all the other things.
And that's it. And I mean, the rest of the country is trying to compete with your housing prices anyway, so it'll very all true. Even out eventually, so that's wild. Amanda, I love you for a lot of reasons.
Aw, thanks.
But I really love that I have learned from you over the last few years that I've known you just about the unhoused community and that side of life in California. I would love to hear a few things. We'll start with your perspective of that, just from a educate us who don't know standpoint.
Yeah. Do you want to know more about like how I got to this place or?
Sure. Absolutely. I think that there's the narrative, right? We are learning the older we get in America that the narrative of what we're fed is so different from the reality. Mm-hmm. And so for sure how you got to this place, because you've literally lived everywhere and done everything and how this happened, I'm not sure, but also, just ways that I think we as people can just be a little bit more accepting, less fearful, kinder, community-driven, that kind of stuff.
For sure. So I think the two things I hear all the time are mental health and substance use. And here's what we as professionals in the field know is that sometimes homelessness is what is the catalyst for mental health and or substance use. Sometimes homelessness is what starts the whole cycle, and the trauma of that can kickstart a mental health issue that may be underlying or may not have come about at all if not for the trauma. And then sometimes when you have mental health that goes undiagnosed and untreated, people will self-medicate. And that's where the drugs come in. I also have heard stories of women who will take speed to stay up all night so that they can protect themselves, so that they're not attacked. I've heard stories of people who, you know, 2 years ago could have been sitting in a restaurant with you and I having dinner and have what we would all consider normal lives, jobs, paying bills, have a house just like all of the rest of us. And then they lose a spouse either by through divorce or through a death. Someone loses a job, sometimes all at the same time. The pursuit of happiness is actually a really good picture of what mm-hmm. that looks like. I remember being so excited when that movie came out, just going, oh, I hope everybody sees this and understands how easy it is. We're all on the precipice of this happening to any of us. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like that's kind of the common thought process mm-hmm. around homelessness and the unhoused community. And the reality is much more nuanced and much, much more complicated. Sure. Not quite as black and white as everybody would like to think. It's a lot more. We've been talking at work about living in the gray. We live in the gray.
I think life primarily is in the gray, and nobody wants to talk about that because that's so uncomfortable. But really, like, mm-hmm. like you said, the precipice of this happening to any of us. And I think that it is so mind-boggling to me how 4 years ago, like 4 years ago this spring, our world just, you know, we entered our first set of unprecedented times for many of us. And we mm-hmm. were just realizing, you know, oh, we're better as community. We should help people and we should do this and we should tune into this and we should. And it seemed like this global awakening was happening in this global perspective. And then, you know, we transitioned into June with George Floyd, and it just seemed like all of these incredibly powerful things were happening. And then we just end up back in this place where things are boxed again, and we want to judge the man that we have to step over to walk into the restaurant instead of like seeing the humanity. And it was so hopeful that we were going to start seeing humanity, and to realize that 4 years ago, a lot of us couldn't even find toilet paper. And mm-hmm. since then, we have watched mortgage prices triple, and we have watched mm-hmm. food prices triple. And we know, like, we all hear, even if we live over on the East Coast, we all hear about just the tremendous volume of unhoused people in along the West Coast entirely, from Seattle to Portland, and just the crisis that is coming from all of that. And yet, mm-hmm. I don't know, it seems like people are just like, well, that doesn't affect me, but it really does, because one more rent mm-hmm. hike and you may be living in your car. And now these mm-hmm. days it's illegal to feed so many homeless people in cities, and mm-hmm. it is wild out there. And yeah, wild.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of I call it bureaucratic nonsense that keeps systems working the way they are, which oftentimes is unhelpful. We actually, I guess the buzzword right now is systems change. And so we're working on things that will literally change systems and change the way things are done. And it's really exciting to be a part of that. We are really hopeful that these things will actually come to fruition so that we can actually change these systems and change the way that things are done. And it's really exciting to see the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. For our listeners, without giving too many private details, can you just explain a little bit about what you do?
Yeah. So, I'm going to start back one step.
Sure.
I worked in education for a very long time when I first moved to California. And then I found a job working, doing street outreach. And I did street outreach for 4.5 years. And one of my coworkers at that organization left to begin her own thing. She was approached by another organization, and they had some ideas, and they brought her on as a program director to, again, make changes. Now, what I should tell you is that this coworker of mine, she's now my supervisor, lived on the street for, she was raised middle to upper class. And then she lived on the streets for about 8 years. She completely changed her life about 8 years ago, and then has worked tirelessly to bring people with her. So bring people off of the street, bring people out of addiction, bring people into therapeutic services and things like that. So I contacted her and I was like, hey, heard you're doing a new thing. I might be interested. And the next thing I know, I have a whole new job. So, I went from doing street outreach and I did that for, 4.5 years. I work for an enhanced care management team. So we are partnering with insurance companies or an insurance company, health insurance, medical insurance, to meet clients where they're at and help to fill in gaps where other organizations that are doing really amazing work aren't quite hitting all the spots. Mm-hmm. So basically when we talk to clients, they're like, well, what do you do? And I'm like, well, what do you need? So that's the first thing we do is called a needs assessment. And we walk through that with clients and do a comprehensive, you know, do you have legal stuff going on? Do you have mental health? Do you have physical medical needs? Do you have substance use stuff that you need help with? Do you just need somebody to talk to sometimes? Mm-hmm. Do you need help with SSI and SSDI applications? We can help with any of those things. And if we don't know how to do that, we will connect you with someone who does. And if we don't know all the answers to your questions, we will find somebody who does know the answers to those questions, or we'll walk with you through finding those answers. And so, that's essentially what I'm doing right now. We are still building that team, and we're hoping to build a center eventually that will have all of the resources that someone might need in one building, where they can walk in and receive mental health care and medical treatment and make appointments for Sublocade or Suboxone treatment. Anything that you can think of, barber services or clothing resources and things like that, we're going to have hopefully all under one roof one day.
That's amazing. I love it so much. And I love the, what do you do? Well, what do you need? Because I am so passionate about community, and I really believe that community is the answer to literally 100% of our problems every time, whether it's like abuse, substance abuse, just everything. If we were better as general people to our neighbors and within our communities and within our cities, more aware, more in touch, more accepting, more into connecting with people who may be a little bit outside of what we normally surround ourselves with, I think that so many things would just fix, so many problems would fix themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that that question, what do you need, really is it. It's not my job to tell you, this is what I can do for you. This is how I'm going to help you. It's how can I help you? Literally, what do you need? Mm-hmm. And I love that so much.
And a lot of times we get, I'll ask, well, what do you need? And they don't even know where to start, right? Yeah. So then I come back with this list of, okay, what about this? What about this? What about, you know, like we can go through our list of like, here's some common things that we see. Do you fit into any of these categories? Or do you think that you might need help with this? Or, I mean, honestly, one big thing that we do is help people get IDs. It is so, so, so hard for people to hold on to an ID on the street. Either it gets stolen, it gets lost, you had it in your hand and literally it's gone. It's a tiny little thing when you think of it in the grand scheme of things. And so we try really hard to make sure that people just have their documents on them, and that they're able to keep up with those. I don't know if people understand how many things, when you have an ID, it's real easy just to pull it out at any point. But how often and how many times we use our ID for things, mm-hmm. And you don't have one, and it can make life difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. And I like that you touched on trauma, because I know that having learned myself in the process of like deconstructing from so many American things and relearning things and re-educating myself, how many mm-hmm. of these like terribly stigmatized things really do root back to trauma. And so mm-hmm. while in America, or especially several sections of America, we do have substance abuse issues, what we have are trauma issues that people are not educating each other on how to heal them and deal with them and process mm-hmm. them. And so it isn't, again, all of these things just root back to something that could have been fixed if we were doing what a community does. And that's why when we look back and we're like, well, you know, 80 years ago, there were our own set of problems. But 80 years ago, a lot of these weren't issues because people took care of each other, neighborhoods took care of each other. And
absolutely. Yeah. Community is hugely important. I see a lot of amazing things happening within some communities. And you know what? The community on the street is really, really strong too. I can't tell you how many times I've come up to somebody and started a conversation. I'm like, hey, you ready to go to shelter? And then they're like, ooh, would love to, but I'm actually like holding my friend's stuff right here because they've gone to the store, or they've gone, you know, or just with us, you know, like they will take care of us. You know, I've walked into people's areas and they're like, hey, I have some extra of whatever. Do you need some? And I'm like, it's just a beautiful picture of who we are, right? As humans. Yeah. I really love this idea of community and how we can see each other in a different way. I do want to speak to trauma. I think, when considering mental health, there's still such a stigma about getting treatment. And on the street, there's even a bigger stigma. People will see you, or could potentially see you, as weak. Taking medication can be seen as, you know, being, quote, crazy, or, again, being weak. So people don't want to do that. They don't want to get treatment, or they don't want to get the medication that they need. Or there's just a general sense of miseducation. Mm-hmm. People don't have the knowledge that they need to understand what life could be or how things could be different. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of that as well. Like, here's what going to therapy actually looks like, or here's what mental health treatment really could be. And it's really cool to see, you know, transformation in that way when mm-hmm. people open up. And in large part, like, we find ourselves in those positions ourselves, like mm-hmm. clients develop relationships with us and they trust us, and then they want to talk to us because we are now their person. We are the person that they trust and the person that has been there, and we've developed a relationship. And so now they'll come to us as their, yeah, as their venting place, which is, yeah, fine. We open that and welcome that. We open that door and we welcome that, but we do try to direct them to the professionals as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, like, there is such a, I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I think in all of the ways that maybe somebody listening can't relate to someone who is without a home living on the streets right now, that may be one big way, is we're noticing our parents, like the boomer generation, and their therapy was weakness. And it's okay to take Xanax because you need to get through the day, or it's okay to, you know, do this or drink like 90 liters of whatever it is you drink, but it's not okay to take like a pill to curb your bipolar because you're weak and you should be able to figure that out on your own. And so I think that many of us are having to reframe and re-educate ourselves about what our parents and grandparents believed as a core growing up. And it's not bad on them. It just was, again, a misinformation, miseducation. And mm-hmm. they didn't deal with trauma either. They just right. self-medicated in their own ways, or it mm-hmm. came out in really unhealthy coping skills that generationally passed on. And so I think that's definitely something that many of us listening can hear. I'm so grateful to be alive in the time when we are reframing therapy and emotions and mental and emotional health, because we see so many people like come to life in ways that maybe they haven't before. And that is such a beautiful thing. And that you get to do that literally every day for work is amazing. Yeah. Grit and Grace, A Journey Towards Resilience is the most recent venture from entrepreneur and speaker Angela Devlin. In what is part memoir and part call to action, Angela's book asks us to delve into who we are and what we are meant to do. Grit and Grace becomes a roadmap for navigating change and healing as we create a life that aligns with what matters most. You can purchase Grit and Grace, A Journey Towards Resilience, everywhere books are sold, or by heading to the link in our show notes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We were just talking. So, okay. One of our programs is we are working directly with the court system. We work with attorneys and the judges, and then we can collaborate with community resources. So inpatient rehab facilities, outpatient rehab facilities, sober living homes, we are collaborating with therapists, mental health providers, our Orange County healthcare agency, and wrapping around this person and saying, we have all of these different resources available to you, and we're going to provide as many things as we can to get you to that next step. You're not alone. You don't have to do this by yourself. And it's a really beautiful thing to see. We make it really, really hard for someone to say no. We make it really hard for them to not at least try it. We also know that sometimes you're going to try it and it's not going to work the first time, or even the fifth sometimes. But we don't judge people. And we just, when they come back, we're like, all right, you ready to go again? Let's try this again. And we'll keep doing it until it sticks, you know? And then it's interesting because sometimes the person who it took the longest and was hardest to figure out that change is the person who's out there screaming in the streets about how awesome that change is. And it's really fun to see that. I think, you know, sometimes the people who work the hardest understand what, you know, the value in what they've had to work for. And so they'll be the ones calling, you know, other people up and being like, hey, you got to do this. It's amazing. It'll change your life. And that's really, that peer-to-peer support is really, really important. But I love seeing people come out of the court system with a plan in place. And we're literally not letting people go out. Like, they're not going to the street at all. And they're not going home to their parents' house or their ex-wife's house or to their kids' house or whatever. They're coming with us directly from jail straight to the next step in their plan. Because we know that if we don't do things immediately, somebody's going to change their mind, or they're going to get back in their old neighborhood and possibly make bad decisions, or they're going to, you know, they're going to get influenced in one way or another, and they're going to lose, you know, that drive that they had when they told us yes. So we grab them and we take them to the next step. And then we come back the next day and we're like, cool, you're still here. Awesome. What's next? You know, and we'll start making the plan for the next thing. And it's, yeah, it's really cool to see. It's really cool to see that.
Sometimes the familiar is like the biggest monster we face, because even when it's hard, it's so uncomfortable. It's so comfortable. Even when it's uncomfortable, it's comfortable. And yes, we stick with what we know. And so I love that you really mentor in that way of, you're not alone. I see you. I'm beside you. I'm taking you to this next thing. I believe in you. You can do it. Mm-hmm. Instead of the, I talked about this with another guest recently, the halfway house mentality of, mm-hmm, you've been incarcerated and now you're free. And look, here's a paper of what you need to do. And call your guy in like 10 days and you can stay at this halfway house. You need to be in by 10. Mm-hmm. And there's too much space there. There's too much unknown and too much, mm-hmm, such a lack of guidance that, yes, these are grown adults, but they've also been living every single second of every day being told, this is what happens. This is what comes next. This is what you do. This is your very small boundary.
Right.
It's never going to be a success thing in that way, unless, right, they have a solid support network coming up around them and saying, what you're doing, we believe in you, you can do this, this is what comes next, mm-hmm, these are resources we have for you. And it's very sad.
Yeah. I like to give my clients homework, but only as much as I'm willing to give myself. So usually I finish a meeting with the client by saying, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and you're going to do this and this. So we're both doing equal parts. And then I make sure, if at all possible, I am able to do the three things that I told them I was going to do. I try really, really hard to make sure that I'm keeping my end of the bargain, because you know what? So many of our clients have been let down over and over and over and over by people in their lives, by professionals in their lives, by systems, all kinds of stuff. And so I try really hard to make sure that I'm not another person letting them down also. And I find that when I continue to show up and consistently I'm doing the things that I say I'm going to do, they are more willing to meet me where I'm asking them to meet me. We've talked about trauma, but like, I don't know if people fully understand what trauma does to someone's brain and how it literally changes people's ability to function. I don't know if you've read, we might've talked about this before, but The Body Keeps the Score, yeah, is an incredible picture of what happens to someone's brain. And so when I read that book, I started to understand how, whenever I ask my client to meet me somewhere and they don't, it's not because they're being stubborn and just not meeting me, or they're being super forgetful and just forgetting that we have an appointment. It's that their brain is literally not functioning the way it has in the past, and they don't have the ability and the functioning to meet me on a Tuesday at 3 p.m. like I've asked them to, even though I've written it down, even though I called them the day before and reminded them. Like, it is not something that their body is capable of doing. And that completely changed my entire perspective, and changed how I do things. When I learned that about how people operate, it has helped me to be able to treat my clients with more grace and more understanding, and allow them space to be who they're going to be in that moment. And then we'll work all the rest of it out. We'll figure all the rest of the things out together.
Yeah, I love that so much. It is true. Like, it comes back to that that idea of we're minimizing people and not seeing their humanity by expecting them to meet our expectations. And so when someone in your position can say, like, you need to meet me Tuesday at 3, here's the reminder, I'm going to call you, I'm going to this, I'm going to that, I'm going to have a cup of coffee waiting for you, I know you love your coffee, like, whatever, like, these are the things I'm going to do for you. And then they don't show up. We have this habit of, well, because they're lazy, they're irresponsible. I knew they weren't going to show up. I knew they don't really care about their recovery or their health or their this or their fill in the blank, whatever it is. And we just minimize someone's humanity based on our own expectations. And that doesn't work. And that's what I love so much about so many things that you've said here about meeting that person where they're at and seeing what do you need and acknowledging, like, this is why that may be different, and understanding that trauma or triggers or all of these different things that are very real, very complicating aspects of everyday life can impair a person's ability to do the things that maybe we feel like are pretty easy. And I think about
my phone is everything, right? It's my alarm, it is my calendar, it is my communication with people, it is the way I look at pictures of my adorable niece and nephew online. It is everything I need. Finding a charger or finding a place to charge a device is the most difficult thing, because you can't sit in Starbucks and charge your device if you're not buying something. And you can't buy something if you don't have money to do that. And so I think about whenever I have a doctor's appointment, I have a reminder that goes off the week before, the day before, and 30 minutes before. And if my phone isn't charged or plug in, I can't get those reminders. And if I don't have access to my phone when I make the, I can't fill out the paperwork, the thousands of pages of paperwork that they want me to fill out before I can get to the appointment. So things like that, I think a lot of times house people just think of second term, and it's not that simple for a lot of our unhoused neighbors.
Yeah, well, and especially when you have a home that you go to bed, you go to every night.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Another part of what I think is really successful, we talked about peer-to-peer support earlier, but on our team, we have a mixture of people who my supervisor calls us professional case managers. So, like, I graduated from high school, I went to college, I got a job. I did that traditional route. I work with several people who don't have high school diplomas, or they might have a GED. Most of them don't have college degrees. Many of them have justice-involved backgrounds. They've been to jail. They've been to prison. And I work alongside them, because here's the thing. I can't go have a conversation about substance use with some of my clients. They will look at me and laugh because they know that I clearly don't know what I'm talking about. I know the education. I know the textbook part of substance use, but I don't know the street language of substance use. And I don't know, like, I can't have the conversations. But my supervisor, who has lived a life, she can very easily have those conversations and be very frank and honest with people because she's been there. She knows that. So I think one of the really cool things about our team is that we are a mixture of different types of backgrounds, different types of people. And in fact, whenever I did my background check to start my job, my supervisor was like, I am not worried about this one. Like, it's going to come back. I came back in less than 24 hours. And she was like, just wait till we start hiring more people. They're back. Who we are as a team is we can come together and approach these things together with all of our different backgrounds and just be really strong, I think, in how we approach things, because we have this different perspective that all of us bring. And I really love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it is such a reminder. Every one of us, anyone listening, has something special to contribute to creating a better space within our community, whatever it is, like whatever we can't, I cannot sit there correct and say, like, I really dream of being like a substance abuse recovery mentor, because that's not an experience that I have, but I have other things that I would bring to the table that I could get involved in my community and working with. Specifically for me would be like abused women, right? Abused women and girls who are just processing and dealing with those things. But we all, no matter what experience we have, what traumas we've lived through, what education we have, we all have something to contribute to making the space around us a better and healthier space. Even if that's writing a check, like even if it's going through our closet and like downsizing, we all have something we can do to contribute to making. 100%. Yeah. And that's the beauty of community. And sometimes we just get so overwhelmed and we don't do anything because it's too big, but it comes back to your original thing of, you know, what do you do? Well, what do you need? We all can fill needs. We just, I'm just a little creative. We need to be creative and we need to pay attention to the needs that are there and not just what we've decided needs to be done.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I was just talking to my coworker today. We were having lunch and I was talking about how I used to keep gift cards in my car, in my console in my car. So that when I was at a red light, if someone was there, I could give them a $5 in and out gift card. $5 doesn't actually eat much anymore. But I find that people still appreciate the gesture. And even if I don't have anything to give someone, I can look them in the eye and acknowledge them and smile at them and wave. I find that people also just want to be seen, and they want to just feel like they are, you know, semi-important, even if it's just for a split second, you know, with a connection at a red light. I have a coworker who works in a different organization now, and she has been working really, really hard with a client who has some pretty serious medical issues, and they're trying really hard to get him to agree to go to the hospital. Our clients struggle with wanting to go to the hospital because sometimes they are not treated with as much respect where I might if we went into the hospital. And so it's hard for them to have the courage to go. But they've been trying really hard because he has some pretty significant things going on. But one thing that she said is that during this time when they've spent a lot of time with him, she's been sitting next to him and just kind of putting her hand on his shoulder occasionally, or just like kind of just a little tap to let him know she's there. And she said to me the other day that it seems like he hasn't been touched in a very long time. And you mentioned the mic earlier when we were all kind of sitting at home. And I think that was one thing that a lot of people felt was the isolation and of being alone and not having human touch. You know, whenever I went to church every week, I would give hugs to everybody. And when I went into the office, you know, certain coworkers, we'd give hugs. And I know some, you know, times when you're with family, I don't live near any of my family. But when you live near your family and you're seeing all the time, you're giving hugs. But during the pandemic, we didn't have a lot of except for maybe the people that were in our own household. And I think that was an eye-opener for people. But our clients feel that every day. They don't often get physical touch on a regular basis. And, you know, people see them as unclean and people see them as dirty. And that's something that's really hard to grasp, is that people still are human and they still deserve to be touched in a way that is, you know, compassionate passionate. But yeah, I think that part is really important too, because people have decided that people don't deserve that or need that, and that's not true.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. Before we transition here, I want to stress something that I'm super passionate about. When you pull up to a red light and you see somebody panhandling with a sign or that says they're homeless, it is not our business whether they are homeless or not. It is not our business if they are going to take our $5 that we give them out the window and walk to their BMW in the parking lot. It doesn't matter. It's not our business. A completely emotionally and mentally healthy person is not going to stand there and beg for money at a stoplight. So if we can look at them, we can smile at them, we can stop averting our eyes and looking away and just be human, treat them human. If we have something to give them and we feel led to give them, give it to them. Like I get so frustrated with the people that are like, well, he's probably not homeless. It doesn't matter. It's not our business. It's not our business. If I have $5 or $10 that I can spare to give them, then I'm going to give it to them, because that's on them. That's on their journey and that's their business. And maybe they just need people to look them in the eye, and it doesn't matter. It's not my business. It's not my business. So I just, for our listeners, want to reiterate that it's not a big homeless scam out there of healthy people trying to rip us off. That is not what is happening. Yeah.
Right. And for the record, I've never seen someone roll up their sign at the end of the day and go get in their BMW. I've seen them roll up their sign and go across the street and put down their blanket and lay down. But in my years of doing this, I've never heard that.
Everybody has those stories. Everyone has those stories. And every great once in a while, you see like a social media video about it. But for the most part, like, those are not those people. And I think that we are so comfortable as a society judging. So we'll be like, well, maybe if you can't afford to feed yourself, you shouldn't have a dog. No, they should have a dog. They should have a dog, because that dog gives them companionship and that dog gives them protection, and that dog needs someone to love them just as much as they need someone to love them. And it's fine if they have a dog. Like, stop. It's not our business. That is their business. And so just give them some freaking milk bones and a lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. They actually love when we have dog food and cat food, for their furry friends. You know, it's interesting, because a lot of times my clients have acquired a pet, and it's not because they went out looking for one. It's because there was puppies on the street. And so they took the puppies because the puppies were going to die if not. And so they are rescuing their pets just like people who are in houses. So
100%.
And it's also the question of who rescued who, right? Like, we know that about our animals, that they bring a sense of companionship that is not like anything else. And I go back to women. I have several women, female clients who have big dogs because they want to feel protected and they want to have that something with them to have companionship. And I think that's important.
So important. So important. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you with my rant, but that drives me crazy. And I am at 48 years old and like, I'm just like, nope. Somebody says like anything about it, I'm just like, no, you're going to nip that right now. Cause, people are people. People deserve to be seen as people. That's it. Period. There's no conditions. There's no fine print. It's crazy. So I usually at this point will ask my guest where listeners can find them on the internet, which brings us to your alter ego. Where can people find you on the socials?
So I am at Mildred Stevens with a PH on Instagram. And I believe Twitter as well. I don't, or X or whatever we're calling it this week. I don't use Twitter very much, but I am fairly active on Instagram. You can come check out my cupcake and library and book obsession there.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I am going to give myself an old lady name for my alter ego because I just love it so much. I love it. And when you don't show up in my
feed, for the longest time,
go ahead. There was a delay, but go ahead.
Sorry. For the longest time, my profile picture was, she was probably in her 80s, like gray hair, pink, hot pink pants, and smoking a cigar. I love her. I think that she's fabulous, but I didn't change my profile picture to something a little more. Well, actually, it might still be my ex profile picture. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it so much. I love when you don't show up in my feed and I'm like, I need to look for you. And then I get to type in your old lady name and it always makes me happy because we need to find those joys. And I love it. Oh, yes. I love it. All right. So that is where we can find you. I wrap the show with three questions to just kind of bring us to a haze. I'm so grateful you were here and just to just be open and talk about things that a lot of times people don't know how to talk about or have, you know, we have questions, but we don't really know like what to do. And I feel like you just said a lot of really beautiful things. I took a bunch of notes. So question number one, where is the best place your feet have taken you? Can be physically or metaphorically.
Oh, wow. I think to today, to 2024, we briefly talked about all the places I've lived. I grew up in Louisiana on a farm in Louisiana. My family is all still there. And I get to go back a couple of times a year if I'm lucky. I've lived in Houston in Texas. I've lived in Brooklyn for a little while. And I spent a long time in Philly, which I miss all the time, except for not right now because they probably have really cold weather. Well, you would know that East Coast weather. But I first worked or volunteered in a shelter in Toronto, Canada, when I believe I was 21 or 22. So all of the little things that have happened just to be where I am today. Mm. Yeah. I kind of love where I'm at right now. So
I love it. When you are ready to have the Mildred Stevens / Amanda Hood memoir ghostwritten, I am volunteering for the job. Should you be looking for someone? Because I think that your travels will be amazing. Yeah. It would be quite a story. Yeah. It would be quite a story. And I love it. It's so fascinating. Every time we're in like a group chat and every time you're like, well, when I was blah, blah. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I should be keeping a list of all the places that Amanda has been or worked or amazing, amazing. You're a wealth of knowledge.
It has been a journey.
Yeah, it's amazing. What is something that you are watching, listening to, or reading lately that is giving you life?
Okay. So I mentioned The Body Keeps the Score, which I highly recommend everyone read. It should be like mandatory read for everybody. I literally just finished an episode of Abbott Elementary before we started recording because I was eating dinner and I was like, I need something quick. It just makes me laugh. It is in Philly. So it like, you know, pulls the heartstrings a little bit because I miss Philly so much. I love Abbott Elementary. Did you say listening to? Because I'm going to answer that part as well. I don't know.
Sure. Absolutely.
If you said that or not. But I'm listening to Taylor Swift, all of the albums. She just makes me happy.
Yes. I know this. I know this. I myself am not a Swiftie, but I respect that about you for sure. Yes, I know that. Every time somebody's like something about a Swiftie, I instantly think of you. So my Swiftiest friend, for sure. So if you want a badge, I can make you one that you just wear around. That's like the Swiftiest friend because I love it. I love it. And I don't like not like her. I love her. I love a lot of her music.
That's amazing. Yes.
It's fine. Yeah. That's fantastic. What is something you deserve a gold star for today?
Oh, you know what? I had some hard conversations today. Mm. I enrolled some new clients, and I scheduled some things for this week that are going to be good, but are going to be tough. So yeah, I got a lot of paperwork done, which is the worst part of my job, but necessary.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's five gold stars, but I deserve them all.
You get a whole roll. I have a whole roll here of gold stars for you. You can just have the gold stars. They're yours. That's pretty amazing. I hope that in the hard things that you have scheduled for your week, you can find some pockets of time to practice self-love, because that is necessary.
100%. I have decided that 2024 is the year I do things that make me happy. So recently that meant buying the little $7 pot of tulips at Target that are now on the downward slope of their beauty, but made me very, very happy. I also bought a cute little candle holder. It's just like not anything fancy, but it makes me really happy. So yeah, I'm doing those things, just the little things that every day can just bring me some joy, because man, it'd be rough out there sometimes.
Yeah. We have to find joy. We have to make it happen. Because this is not, a lot of days, it's not going to happen organically. You have to make it happen. You have to be willing to see it. And yes, you are, despite how heavy your job is, I really appreciate that you are always light. Whenever we interact, I just feel light. And I appreciate that so much. I appreciate that for your clients and for your work and the people you interact with, because I'm sure, I know for a fact that even on your worst days, you are still a light bringer, and that is a rare and beautiful thing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean it 1,000,000%. I do not just tell everybody that, I promise. Some people bring death and they're not on my podcast. So
No.
No, not welcome. Thank you, Amanda Mildred, for being here. I appreciate it so much. And I just love our connection, and I adore you, and I can't wait until we are California neighbors living in the sunshine together. And
yes, in our affordable houses.
Right.
They exist.
Yeah, they'll exist. It'll flip back around, and then everywhere else will be expensive, and California will be the ideal real estate. It's going to happen. We're going to manifest that. It's going to happen.
That would be actually incredible, which, by the way, I know we're wrapping up, but I just want to say, a lot of people are like, oh, here's the key to homelessness. Let me tell you what the actual key to homelessness is.
Yes, please.
Affordable housing. We need affordable housing, and that is not what people move into after they've been unhoused and living on the street. Affordable housing, mm-hmm. what you and I need now, so that we don't become like, we're stopping the problem before it even becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. That is the main thing that is needed. And so I throw that out there.
And for sure, like, I want to add to that, in 2018, so it was before the pandemic, in 2018, my husband was offered a job. Two jobs, moved to Pennsylvania. We lived in Detroit, moved to Pennsylvania, moved to LA. And we wanted the LA one for a million obvious reasons. And he said, okay, what is the Pennsylvania job paying? And they told him, and he's like, okay, that's fair. What is the California job paying? Oh, the same. That's interesting. So then we talked to like an advisor about that, and they're like, if you come to California making that, you will be living in a motorhome. Like, there are thousands of people living outside on the outskirts in motorhomes that are making six figures. You can't do it. And that was before the pandemic, before all of these things, these millions of unprecedented times. And we think about that all the time. Like, exactly. That would have prevented so much, because a lot of those people, that's what happened to Portland. That's what happened to Seattle. All of these abandoned motorhomes on the side of the road because people were moving there for jobs and then couldn't afford housing. And then they ended up on the streets. Yeah. So I love that. I love that. We need affordable housing. Let's just throw out affordable healthcare too. We'll put that out there. Affordable mental health care. We'll put that out there.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. We
right. The systems. Yes. That's what you said, right? We're doing systems change. It's just we need all the systems to change.
That's right.
Yep. A big overhaul. It'll happen.
Yep.
We'll bring it. This is the year of bringing things to light. It'll happen. So yes, we will listen back on this episode.
I like that.
And people will be like, wow, they predicted that. Look at how great everything is now. And it was because Misty and Amanda talked about this. So yeah.
Man, maybe we should have listened to them sooner.
100%. 100%. All right. Thank you so much for being here, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad it worked out after, you know, 16 years of trying to make it work.
Exactly.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us 5 stars and leaving a review. Ratings and reviews from listeners like you can go a long way in getting our little show noticed. The Rainy Day Collective podcast exists because of the hard work, passion, and commitment of Chantal Roche, Maggie Friedenberg, Nikki Johnson, and Veronica Hummel, with additional technical engineering by Chris Wagner. I am your host, Misty Mae Wagner, and as always, our team is so grateful for your listening, sharing, and support. Wherever the rest of your day takes you, may it be full of beauty, grace, and connection.